Hopefully you guys are having a wonderful Days of Unleavened Bread. I don't know about you, but Craig and I, we were talking before services. And I was like, man, it's going by so fast this year. I don't remember it going by this fast, usually. So here's a radio transcript that you might have heard before. It says, Americans, the first one to speak, says, please divert your course 15 degrees to the north to avoid a collision. The Canadians respond, recommend you divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid a collision. The Americans respond, this is the captain of a U.S. Navy ship. I say again, divert your course. Canadians, no, I say again, you divert your course. This is the aircraft carrier USS Lincoln, the second largest ship in the U.S. Atlantic Fleet. We are accompanied by three destroyers, three cruisers, and numerous support vessels. I demand that you change your course 15 degrees north. That's 15 degrees north, or countermeasures will be undertaken to ensure the safety of this ship. Canadians, this is a lighthouse. Your call. Now, that's a humorous story. It's also false, by the way. Never happened, at least not in the way that it's related here and elsewhere. But what it does illustrate is something that we need to be mindful of in our lives, and that is flexibility. Today, we're going to look at the importance of flexibility and when we need to be flexible. We're also going to look at what can happen when you refuse to be flexible. And what can happen when you embrace flexibility. So in our ship and lighthouse example, we see what can happen when you refuse to be flexible, when you insist on seeing only your point of view and you lock in to getting your way. See, the commander of the fleet there, of the carrier, he's got no flexibility. He believes that he is the biggest and baddest thing afloat on the ocean. Everyone else needs to get out of his way and do what he wants. In other words, it's a typical reflection of human nature. You want to fight to get your own way, especially when you are challenged with a different perspective or when you're faced with a situation that threatens your comfort zone. And we all feel this way from time to time. It is part of our nature. But we're called to be better than what our nature is. Would be. So today let's focus on three main areas where flexibility comes into play in our lives. The first is in how we relate to others around us. So let's ask some questions. Are you always right? Do you always fight to the death to get your way? Do you ignore anything that doesn't agree with your point of view? Are you like the captain of the ship in our example? Hopefully the answer to all those questions is no. But if you're like me, the answer is likely sometimes. We've all been there. We find ourselves in a situation where we are absolutely convinced that we have the right of it. No matter what anyone says to us, we are inflexible in our perspective. All we can see is our point of view. Let's look at someone who started out inflexible. Let's turn to the book of Job. Now we'll begin at the beginning of the book and we'll set the stage. The beginning of Job, we're told that there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright and one who feared God and shunned evil. Now, right off the bat, we see that this is an extraordinary person, blameless and upright. We don't see that too often describing anyone. And as we go through the story, we see, of course, that Job will be tested. Tested at a level that I don't think anyone here has ever been, nor would you ever want to be. His entire family is killed, with the exception of his wife. His health and his wealth are taken from him. He is reduced to sitting on an ash heap, scraping at the boils on his skin with a piece of pottery. He's sitting there wondering what in the world had just happened to him. He was a well-respected man. He was a leader in the community. He always did the right thing. He always followed God's commandments. So how could he have come to this? Let's turn to Job 10. Now, in the chapters leading up to this, Job's friends had talked with Job and basically accused him of having some hidden sins for God to have stricken him like this. And Job insists continually that he had not sinned. He continues to profess his innocence and continued obedience to God. But here in chapter 10, we see how Job is viewing his circumstances. Chapter 10, verse 1 says, "My soul loathes my life. I will give free course to my complaint. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. I will say to God, 'Do not condemn me. Show me why you contend with me. Does it seem good to you that you should oppress, that you should despise the work of your hands and smile on the counsel of the wicked?'" Now, the Living Bible paraphrases this passage like this, and I think it actually captures the mood of Job in a way that the poetry doesn't. It reads the following. It says, "I am weary of living. Let me complain freely. I will speak in my sorrow and bitterness. I will say to God, 'Don't just condemn me. Tell me why you are doing it. Does it really seem right to you to oppress and despise me, a man you have made, and to send joy and prosperity to the wicked? Are you unjust like men? Is your life so short that you must hound me for sins that you know full well I've not committed? Is it because you know that no one can save me from your hand?'" And then dropping down to verse 11, this is still in the Living Bible, he says, "You gave me skin and flesh and knit together bones and sinews. You gave me life, and you were so kind and loving to me, and I was preserved by your care. Yet all the time, your real motive in making me was to destroy me if I sinned, and to refuse to forgive my iniquity. Just the slightest wickedness, and I am done for. And if I'm good, that doesn't count. I am filled with frustration." When you boil it down, Job was inflexible. He could see things only his way, and he was utterly convinced that he was in the right. It's not until the end of the book, when God forces Job to confront the truth of his situation, that he finally becomes flexible in both his perspective and his feelings about the entire experience. How often have we been in situations where we were like Job? We were absolutely certain that we were going through an unfair trial. This should not be happening to me. And we dig in and we start becoming bitter in our thinking, wanting to fight against anyone that doesn't see it our way. But then when the trial is past us and we can look back on it, we see where if we had just been more flexible in our dealing with others, if we had truly tried to sincerely see other perspectives, we may have shortened the trial, lessened its severity, or even in some cases, avoided it entirely. And why is that? Well, it's because when you become flexible, you're able to tap into synergies with others. Let's go to Ecclesiastes 4. In Ecclesiastes 4, while you're turning there, think about what an inflexible person is like. Is an inflexible person very much fun to be around? Anyone that refuses to see any other viewpoint, they won't give in on any little thing, they insist that they're right about everything. How friendly is a person like that? And how likely are you to want to be a friend to that person? On the other hand, the flexible person, that person that will give you time and consideration, they'll respect your opinion, and you'll have some give and take in conversation. Well, how friendly are they? And how likely are you to be friendly with them? Now, Ecclesiastes 4 tells us what the value of such a person like that is for us. Verse 9, Ecclesiastes 4, verse 9, tells us that two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion, but woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. See, it's tough to be alone. And those who are inflexible in their thinking and in their dealing with others tend to be alone. They tend to turn away from those who don't agree with everything that they think, and they're sitting in their echo chamber. I found that in business, the best ideas come out of interaction with people who have different viewpoints and opinions from myself. I don't need someone looking at the problem from the same perspective as me. I already know what I think. What I need is someone looking at it from the other side, and I want that person to be someone that I like and that I respect. Someone who is flexible in their thinking, and they're trying to see it from my point of view as well. And we're told in verse 9 that when we do that, we have a good reward for our labor. See, in physical terms, there's that old saying that many hands make light work. And we see this principle of two being better than one in Luke 10. Now, keep a finger here in Ecclesiastes, but we turn over to Luke 10. Jesus, on two occasions, sent disciples ahead of him to prepare the way for him, sent them together in pairs. And Luke 10, verse 1, is one of those, and it says this: after these things, the Lord appointed 70 others also. And he sent them two by two before his face into every city and place where he himself was about to go. See, Jesus knew that there are times when these men would need the encouragement of a partner to continue on, to do the work of preparing these cities and these towns for the coming of Jesus. And they would undoubtedly face challenges that would have made things very difficult for one person alone to deal with. Because it's always easier to do when you know that someone's got your back. Back to Ecclesiastes 4. We'll continue on in the next verse, verse 11. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 11 says, again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? See, Solomon's example here shows that two people together, they can supply enough heat for one another to keep warm. One person alone is much more subject to hypothermia than two or three. Now, a few years ago, on Mount Hood, there were three climbers that were caught in a storm. And one of the climbers had apparently dislocated his shoulder. And this was going to be a very serious issue. With a dislocated shoulder, there's no way that he could climb down, even if the other two were helping. So, unfortunately, his friends, they didn't apply this principle that we just read in God's Word. Instead, his friends left him in an ice cave alone, and they continued to climb down to go for help, to bring help back. But tragically, the two friends did not survive the dangerous descent, and the one that was left in the ice cave was not able to survive on his own. He was later found dead of hypothermia. Now, apparently the cold had frozen the brains of the two that were going for help, because sadly enough, these climbers had cell phones on them, and the ice cave location was known, and if they had just stayed in the ice cave together and waited for the weather to break, where they would have gotten better cell phone reception, they would have been able to all have been rescued. So, the big takeaway regarding getting along with other people is this: flexibility is the art of incompatible people learning to get along. Flexibility is the art of incompatible people learning to get along. So you can look at marriage as one of the ultimate examples of this. You had better develop this art in order to survive. You see, because all of us are incompatible in the sense that even if we came from the same family, no matter how long you're married to your mate, we all have differing needs, wants, values, experiences. We are different. Men and women are different. And as life goes on, we realize that we ourselves also continually change. We're not the same person that we were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. We've changed. Our views change, and so do our values over time. It's the art of learning to live compatibly that does not change. See, the Bible defines this process, as we just had pointed out to us in the sermonette, that we need to love God with all our heart, soul, and mind, and loving our neighbor as ourselves. Those don't change, but the flexibility of how we do it will over time. Jeff Bezos is the CEO of Amazon, and he said something in an interview that I thought captured this idea of being able to work with others quite nicely. He says, as a company, he says, "We are stubborn on vision. We are flexible on details." See, for us as Christians, the vision is the kingdom of God. That is the goal. And we have a roadmap in the plan of God, the holy days, His word, the church, but the details, the day-to-day, moment-to-moment, you'd better be flexible because people are involved in it. Let's move to another area where we need to be flexible. That is in our relationship with God. The Bible is full of examples of people and groups that were inflexible in their thinking. They were so set in their ways with how they viewed things. They were so locked into their perspective that they were unable to change unless something very dramatic happened to them. Let's look at a few examples. Let's look at the Pharisees. Let's go to Mark 3. Beginning of Mark 3. And he, Jesus, entered the synagogue again. And a man was there who had a withered hand. So they watched him closely. The Pharisees were watching whether or not he would heal him on the Sabbath so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man who had the withered hand, "Step forward." Then he said to them, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they kept silent. And when he had looked around at them with anger, being grieved by the hardness of their hearts, he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored as whole as the other. Then the Pharisees went out and immediately plotted with the Herodians against him how they might destroy him. See, the Pharisees were so invested in their traditions, in how they viewed the keeping of the law, that they were unable to see themselves for what they were. Jesus looked around at them with anger. Why? Because of the hardness of their hearts, because of their inflexibility. See, the Pharisees taught that according to their rabbinical law, that healing on the Sabbath could only be a matter of life and death. And the Pharisees were so angered by Jesus healing this man's hand. Oh, it's only his hand. Can't that wait until tomorrow? This is the Sabbath. How dare you break God's Sabbath to heal a man's hand? That was their reaction. They were so angry that we read in verse 6 that they went right from there to start plotting how they were going to kill him. They were so convinced that they were right that when they were presented with something that was against their practice, they had absolutely zero flexibility in their thinking or understanding. A pattern is repeated over and over. Let's look at another one in John chapter 9. In the first part of this chapter, in chapter 9, Jesus heals a man who was blind from birth. This is on the Sabbath again. Let's pick it up in John 9, verse 13. After Jesus had healed this man, it says that they brought him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees. Now it was a Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then the Pharisees also asked him again how he had received his sight. He said to them, "He put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and I see." Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, "Well, this man," referring to Jesus, "is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath." Others said, well, how can a man who is such a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. See, we see from their reaction that the events that we read about in Mark 3 before, they had no effect on most of them. They are still inflexible in their view about healing on the Sabbath. And they're still attacking and defaming Christ. Now, if you continue in the account here in John 9, you find that after the formerly blind man ends up being called before the Pharisees to give them the story, well, they decide that it's too fantastic. So they call the man's parents in to tell them, you know, and confirm for them that the man had been blind since birth. And the Pharisees keep questioning him and making him tell the story over and over again until the poor guy's finally got enough. He's had enough. Verse 27, he answered them, I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? Well, obviously they didn't like that, so they cast him out, and that was a very serious thing indeed. See, it was concerning enough that we read that Jesus, when he heard about it, he searched for the man that he had given sight to give that man hope and assurance that Jesus was indeed the Son of God. Now let's pick it up in verse 39, because here we're going to see a big consequence of a lack of flexibility in responding to God and his truth. It says, verse 39, and Jesus said, for judgment I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind. Then some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said to him, are we blind also? Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remains. So what's the point here regarding flexibility? If we harden our hearts, if we are inflexible, we become like the Pharisees. See, they were so sure of themselves that they said, we see, we know. And they're not able to see that the man standing in front of them was the very Lord of the Sabbath day, the ultimate authority. Some might say, well, that was the Pharisees. Don't have to worry about us. Well, let's turn to Mark 16. Now, in Mark 16, after Jesus had been crucified, and we see that he is risen. Let's pick it up in verse 9, Mark 16, verse 9. It says, now when he rose early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven demons. She went and told those who had been with him as they mourned and wept. And when they heard that he was alive and had been seen by her, they did not believe. After that, he appeared in another form to two of them as they walked and went into the country. And they went and told it to the rest, but they did not believe them either. Later, he appeared, this is verse 14, he appeared to the 11 as they sat at the table, and he rebuked their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they did not believe those who had seen him after he had risen. See, the word that's used in this passage is the term sclerocardia. It literally means hardening of the heart. It is the same exact word that was used to describe the Pharisees and their attitude. For the Pharisees, they refused to believe what they saw. And here, for the disciples, they refused to believe what they had heard. So what about you? What about me? Do we ever run the risk of being so sure of ourselves, of what we see or believe, that we are unable to even accept the possibility that we could be wrong in our understanding? See, this can help when relating to others, because it's really easy to hear somebody's story and buy in completely and then we harden our hearts to anything that contradicts it. Proverbs 18:17, I'll go ahead and read it rather than turning to it, but it does warn us of that tendency and what happens. Proverbs 18:17 says that the first one to plead his cause seems right until his neighbor comes and examines him. We always need to be looking for the both sides of the story. So God examines each of us. He looks at the inward man. He looks at our heart. So what does he see in you? Does he see a heart that is open to instruction, to more understanding, open to growing in peace and in love? Or does he see something else? Something less flexible. Something that's more focused on what you want than on what God wants for you. Do you have a heart that is humble and obedient even when you feel like you're being wronged? Or do you have a heart that insists on fighting for its own way? See, these are very serious questions. They're ones that we need to be asking ourselves continuously, especially during these days of unleavened bread, because just like so many other things in life, flexibility can be lost if we don't continually work at it. See, most everybody knows that it's a good idea to warm up and do some stretching before engaging in a strenuous workout. Well, why? Well, the reason why is because cold muscles are a whole lot more likely to get strained and torn when you put them under stress. See, warming up and getting flexible allows us to work through an exercise routine without injuring ourselves. That's just as true for our spiritual life as it is for our bodies. Except we don't call them exercise routines. What we call them are trials. And we find another parallel with exercise. The more often you exercise, the bigger the weights you can use and the stronger you get. Guess what? God will stretch you, if you allow him, to warm you up, to prepare you for your spiritual workouts, the trials that you go through. How many of us have seen a power lifter, you know, in the Olympics or, you know, maybe, you know, back in the old days, great, you know, the wide world of sports? Maybe you've lifted weights yourself. A common exercise is the bench press. That's the one where the lifter is laying back on the bench, brings the loaded barbell down to the chest, and then just pushes it right back up. Now, when someone is lifting a large amount of weight for them, there is a chance of failure. Okay, in the bench press, you better make sure that you have a spotter. Because if you fail, you've got that bar coming down on your chest. And I've seen times where somebody, you know, failed. They just didn't have the strength to put it back up, and now they've got all that weight sitting down on their chest, and they got to figure out how to, you know, lean over to the side and dump out. What you really want is a spotter. You want someone standing behind you. They're watching very carefully to see how you're doing with that weight. And if you're struggling, they'll give you encouragement. You know, usually in the weight room, they start yelling at you. You know, you got this, you know. It's very macho, you know. But if it then still looks like you're going to fail, they're going to give you just enough help so that you can get that bar up. Get past that sticking point so that you can finish the move. So that spotter also, if your arms just simply give out completely, that spotter is there so they'll take the load so that you don't get yourself hurt. When it comes to our spiritual lives, God is our spotter. See, we see that in 1 Corinthians 10. 1 Corinthians 10. Verse 13. It says, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it." See, God is not going to put too much weight on your spiritual barbell. Whatever you're dealing with, you can be confident that you do have the strength to handle it. Even if God does need to give us a little bit of extra help here and there, just like a good spotter in the weight room. So how does God stretch us so that we can be spiritually strong enough to bear the trials that are going to come to us? Well, first, God gives us the tools that we can use to get warmed up and stretched. He gives us his word to read and study, prayer, fasting. Those are tools. But you need to use them in order to get warmed up and stretched. Here's something to think about. Take your daily Bible reading time and study time and double it. Maybe even triple it. Watch what happens in your life. See, about 6 months ago, I decided to start spending more time on flexibility. See, and this is talking physical flexibility. I tend to have back problems, and when I'm stretching regularly, those problems usually go away. They're usually not a concern. So I developed a routine. It's got a little warm-up, and then I do a whole series of stretches that I do every morning. Now, I've only missed like 3 days in the past 6 months of doing this. And that was when I was traveling for work, have to be out the door, you know, like at 4 o'clock to catch a flight. But the reason why I'm so consistent, I think, with that physical routine of stretching is that I set myself a rule that I don't get any coffee until I'm done with it. So now the problem is that that routine takes about 35, 40 minutes to complete from start to finish. And I didn't want to get up any earlier than I already did in order to still be able to get my Bible reading in. So what I did was I combined them. What I do my Bible reading on is an app on my phone. And so in order for me to really stretch my Bible reading along with my body as I was in there, I'm like 35, 40 minutes, I'm not going to be doing anything but being in a quiet place stretching. So I found a Bible reading program on that app that's had me reading 10 chapters of the Bible per day. You want to talk about a stretch, because you can read the entire Bible through in a year doing just 3 chapters a day. So what's happened? Not only am I more limber physically, and I'm feeling good, no injuries during that time, but spiritually speaking, I feel like I'm going through a growth spurt. Taking in so much of God's word on a daily basis is allowing me to see more things in life that remind me of what I just read in the past day or so. And it's allowed me to be more ready, more spiritually limber for the trials that are in store for me. There have been times where something has come at me that 6 months or a year ago, I would have probably handled completely different, because I would have been stiff. I would have not been ready to go. Now I'm ready to go. I feel much more confident in my relationship with God and how I'm dealing with others. And a lot of that is because of making sure that I'm being spiritually prepared. The point of this story, though, is that it's a really great idea to stretch yourself by applying God's tools that he provides to you in a greater way than what you might be currently doing. And this week and the days leading up to Pentecost is a great time to establish a new habit. Now, God also stretches us through the trials themselves. When we let God direct us by promptings from his Spirit or by what we read in his word, especially when we're in the midst of those trials, we can stretch ourselves in new directions that allow us to grow even more deeply in our conversion. But if we lock up and we refuse to follow God's direction, when we are inflexible or we don't relax and trust his wisdom on where we need to go in our lives, or even if we're so obliviously caught up in that day-to-day business of our lives, painful situations are going to be the result. Perhaps not right away, but eventually. See, because don't forget that God will do whatever it takes to shape us and get us back on track. Let's turn to 3 John. We must be flexible enough to let our own perspective diminish as we welcome more and more of God's leadership and direction into our lives to help us to stretch and to grow in our conversion. Because that is what God wants. 3 John tells us in verse 2, says, "Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers." See, part of being in health is taking care of our bodies. And maintaining flexibility is a part of that. You know, to have the range of motion in our limbs and our joints that God designed to be there. Well, at least to the best of our abilities. And we can expand on that concept as we have today to consider the spiritual parallels. And at this point, it should be clear that we need to be flexible in our lives because it is important. So what stands in your way? What can cause us to be inflexible? Well, here's the bad news. It's you. You are the number one cause of whatever inflexibility that you have. Now, there are 4 common ways in which you become inflexible. We're going to go over these briefly, but I'd like to give enough for you to think about whether or not any of these apply to you in your life. So the first way that we can become inflexible is buying too much into our story. Now, what do I mean by that? We all have a story. See, we tell ourselves stories about who we are, about where we came from, and we have stories about why we are the way that we are. What we must do is recognize that these stories contain both objective facts and subjective facts. These personal narratives, these stories about who we are, they can become a problem when we become overly attached to them. There's a Dr. Harris, he's an expert in the field. He said, when we fuse with our self-description, it seems as if we are that description, that all those thoughts are the very essence of who we are, the self as description. In less fancy words, what he is saying is that if we buy into a story that locks us into who we are right now, you are closing off the opportunity for you to grow and to change. For the average person, that's bad. But for a Christian, it's deadly. We must be able to grow and to change. And we read about that in Ephesians 4, verse 13, because it tells us what we need to do. You just might want to make a note. It says, Ephesians 4, 13, it's talking about growing till we all come to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. You cannot do that if you buy into a story about yourself that doesn't picture you as someone that is growing and changing constantly. See, we all have a story. We just need to make sure that it's one that pictures someone that is growing into the likeness of Christ. Now, a second way we become inflexible is through what is called cognitive fusion. Cognitive fusion. This is a bit like getting caught up in your story that we just talked about. This is when we're stuck to our thoughts. Not the story, but our thoughts, our attitudes, and our beliefs. In the process of being fused, being stuck together, this way we become rigid. We become inflexible. See, and it'll usually take the form of having a negative thought. Like, I'm a bad person. I'm a stupid person. See, you can easily become fused to such a thought. The reason why is because over 70% of what you hear in a typical day is the voice in your head talking to yourself. And if you are telling yourself these things over and over and over again, you can see how you can get stuck to those thoughts. You lose your flexibility to think more positive thoughts. So ask yourself the question, what sort of self-defeating beliefs, thoughts, or feelings do you typically engage in? What temporary gain do you get from having these negative thoughts? See, it may seem that there's no apparent benefit to having negative thoughts. You know, to think of yourself as bad or worthless. And so many people, unfortunately, do have those thoughts. But there is a benefit because these thoughts usually provide some type of temporary relief from anxiety or pain. The reason why is because they are an excuse. And they are a convenient diversion from having to think more deeply, to dig down to the truth about whatever emotions that are coming up for you. See, God isn't interested in excuses. What he's interested in is seeing us remove the excuses in order for our faith to grow. Another way we become inflexible is when we get stuck in the past or in the future. What does that look like? Well, I think we've all seen the people that get stuck in the past. They excessively dwelling on negative thoughts or painful memories. And they're just chewing on the same thing over and over and over again. Oh, I should have done this, or I should have done that, or if only I had done this. We're equally stuck when we fantasize about the future, or when we worry about what's going to be coming up next. See, whether you're stuck in the past or in the future, in both cases, you are inflexible in the present. Because in both cases, you're missing out on the present moment. And that's especially tragic because now is all that we have. It's always the present. See, Christianity is not a noun. It's a verb. It's what we are to be, and it's what we are to do. We are meant to Christian, to act like God and like Jesus Christ. See, and for us to do that, we must actively notice what is going on internally, inside of us, and externally in the world around us. If you're stuck in the past, or you're spending your time imagining the future, you are living in a dream, because we all have contact at this moment, right now, in the present. And that's all that we have. The fourth way is through a lack of values clarity. A lack of values clarity. Do you really, truly, deeply know what you believe? See, those are the values. They are what drive how you respond to the world and everyone that you come into contact with. See, when we don't take the time to identify our values and then make sure that our behaviors are in line with those values, then we miss the mark. If we don't truly know what those values are, and specifically for us, our values, we're talking about the ones that are rooted in the commandments of God. And if you don't deeply consider them, then it will be no surprise if your actions don't match up with what those values should be. So what does that look like in daily life? Well, imagine this scenario. Think about your motivation for waking up in the morning and going to work. Is it motivated by fusion? Remember cognitive fusion, we're being limited, we're being stuck with self-limiting beliefs. For a lot of people, it sounds like this. It says, I hate my job, but this is all I'm capable of. Or is it motivated by experiential avoidance? That's the person going to work to avoid feeling like a loser. Or they might be going to work just to avoid tension at home. Now imagine how that experience would be different if your purpose was driven instead by your values. Values of contributing to others, developing the self, being a meaningful part of a team, helping others to grow. Now take it to the next level and apply it to your walk with God. Do you look forward to walking with Him each day? Or are you giving yourself negative self-talk that makes you inflexible? When we boil all of this down, inflexibility is about being limited. And unfortunately, we see that we ourselves are often the biggest culprits. We limit ourselves by getting stuck with who we are right now. And we don't realize that in doing so, we prevent ourselves from becoming the person that God is calling us to be. Brethren, we need to stretch ourselves. I'd like to end today's message with a passage from the writings of Dale Carnegie. I think everybody's heard of How to Win Friends and Influence People. He wrote, "You can either bend with the inevitable sleet storms of life, or you can resist them and break." As I saw that happen on a farm in Missouri, I planted a score of trees on that farm, and at first they grew with astonishing rapidity. Then a sleet storm encrusted each twig and branch with a heavy coating of ice. Instead of bowing gracefully to their burden, these trees proudly resisted and broke and split under the load and had to be destroyed. They hadn't learned the wisdom of the forests of the north. I've traveled hundreds of miles through the evergreen forests of Canada, yet I have never seen a spruce or a pine broken by sleet or ice. These evergreen forests know how to bend, how to bow down their branches, and how to cooperate with the inevitable. See, brethren, the storms of life will happen. Use the tools that God has provided to us to maintain flexibility that will allow us to weather them and to grow from them, rather than letting them break us. Don't let inflexibility keep you from the joy that God wants you to experience.